Connect with others in the Awaken Therapist community and join us over on Patreon. When you become a member of the Awaken Therapist community, you'll gain access to exclusive teachings, consultations, and resources. Find out more at awakentherapist.com. I'm Harmony Quaker, licensed counselor, author, and visiting instructor at Naropa University, where I teach Gestalt therapy. I created this podcast to support therapists and clients in unlocking the magic of psychotherapy. In season two, I'm joined by expert therapists who bring a wealth of insight into the conversation of transpersonal counseling. Understanding that all people are whole and all symptoms are adaptive, we can trust that each client's innate wisdom holds the key to their healing. When a client is healing from emotional abuse, supporting them in repairing their attachment system can help them rediscover their sovereign will. In this episode, I offer a combination of a neurobiological and transpersonal approach to working with clients who are healing from narcissistic abuse. One of the hardest parts of working with a client who's enduring emotional abuse from a partner is creating a space for them to make their own decisions. Because we really want our clients to understand that relationships are meant to be a resource in our life and not a drain, it's common for therapists to interject their own ideas as truth about the client's experience. For example, a therapist might say, "This cycle is never going to change," or "Your partner is never going to change." As well-meaning as this is, asserting our ideas as truth, as opposed to supporting the client and finding their own way, actually undermines the client's autonomy. It undermines their sovereign will. And this is really what we need to help them recover. We want our clients to feel empowered and to increase their self-esteem, to know that what they want matters, to know that love is never painful, that love doesn't hurt us. And working with a client who's stuck in a cycle of abuse and can't seem to find their way out really requires our dedication to reaffirming trust in the client's innate wisdom and deeper knowing. For any client, but especially for those who experienced gaslighting, the therapist must be a person in their life who teaches them how to listen to themselves and how to honor their own inner knowing. And when we insert our ideas onto the clients, we actually undermine the process of them reconnecting with their deeper truth. Witnessing our clients move through the world based on ideas that they're broken or unlovable, while simultaneously reinforcing these misbeliefs through the interactions that they have in their relationship, can actually feel quite hopeless for a clinician. Now, I'm talking about emotional abuse that's between two consenting adults where there are no children present. If children are present, we're held to a different standard as a mandated reporter. But in the case of two consenting adults, emotional abuse is where the abuser uses manipulative or controlling tactics to damage their partner's emotional well-being and self-esteem. This type of abuse often comes from someone who has narcissistic personality disorder, and thus it's often called narcissistic abuse. There are four stages of the abuse cycle. The first stage is tension building, and then an incident of violence, and then some form of reconciliation, and then some calm. And the cycle of abuse begins with this increasing tension where the person experiencing the abuse begins to sense something in their partner. Like their partner seems on edge, and the person, who's our client in this case, feels less safe and can sense that something is brewing in their partner. And then an incident occurs, which could be verbal abuse, emotional abuse, physical abuse involving anger, blame, intimidation. And then this is followed by reconciliation, which could be love bombing, recommitting to love, apologizing, or making excuses or blame shifting. Blame shifting is a really common strategy in narcissistic abuse, and it's often referred to as DARVO, which is an acronym that stands for deny, attack, and then reverse victim and offender, which is blame shifting. This stage of reconciliation is really important because it often comes with a lot of passion. After the intensity of the rupture, there's often this intensity of feelings of love in the form of sex. And clients who are stuck in this cycle will often say, "But the sex is so great." When they confuse sex with love, this sexuality and this high from this sexual passion keeps them hooked and trying to get back to this feeling of closeness when the cycle occurs. And then there's some peace in the relationship and the abuse stops. The abuser is kind and affectionate, and this gives the person hope. Like, we've made our way through, and now we're going to be fine. And then at some point, the cycle happens again, the tension builds, the incident happens, there's reconciliation, and then calm. Now, for both the client who endures this emotional abuse, as well as the person who inflicts this abuse, these patterns are adaptive. I really don't want to vilify a person who has narcissistic personality disorder or a person who doesn't know how to regulate their emotions and tries to control the people in their lives in an attempt to find some sense of safety and okayness. So I do want to highlight that the patterns of a personality disorder emerged in response to unmet needs, just as patterns of codependency emerged in response to unmet needs. In one case, the patterns of thinking and behaving harm another. And in the other case, the patterns harm oneself. They're patterns of self-betrayal. I decided to do this episode on healing from patterns of emotional abuse because it's something that I've worked with personally, and I write about it quite vulnerably in my first book, Reveal: Embody the True Self Beyond Trauma and Conditioning. What I've learned in my own journey of overcoming patterns of codependency is that the thing that I look to others for, I need to give to myself. Where I once looked to my partners for validation, I've learned to turn towards myself and validate my own experience, validate my own ways of thinking instead of gaslighting myself. Where I look to my partners for love and belonging, I've learned to turn towards myself and love myself and really belong to myself and stay connected to myself. I've learned to turn towards myself and discover my own dignity, my own right to be alive and to take up space on this planet. And this is really how we can help our clients heal their attachment system by becoming a secure base for themselves. So consider for a moment that every single thought, feeling, and action that your client has is adaptive. Every time they betray themselves, they're enacting an adaptive survival strategy where their nervous system overtakes their conscious thinking and they use a map from the past in an attempt to find safety now. Through the lens of interpersonal neurobiology, we can identify five biologically based core needs. And this comes from the book Healing Developmental Trauma, which I've assigned to my students for many years. The five core needs that all humans have are for connection, attunement, autonomy, trust, and love. When we have unresolved experiences from the past where we needed these qualities from the environment, but we didn't get them. We try to get these needs met now through the adaptive survival strategies that we created then. So, for example, when we get our need for connection met from the environment as we're developing in childhood, we learn how to be in touch with our body and our emotions. When we don't get that need met, we disconnect from our physical and emotional self, and that becomes an adaptive survival strategy, disconnecting from our emotions, disconnecting from our body. When we get our need for attunement met from the environment as we're growing up in childhood, we develop the capacity to attune to our own needs and emotions and recognize, reach out for, and take in physical and emotional nourishment. When we don't get this need met in childhood, we have difficulty knowing what it is that we even need. And if we do know what we need, we believe that those needs don't deserve to be met. When we get our need for trust from the environment, as we're developing our sense of self in childhood, we experience healthy dependence and interdependence. We feel safe in relationship. When we don't have that need met, we believe we can't depend on others and that we always have to be in control. When we get our need for autonomy met in childhood, meaning that our caregivers knew that our autonomous will, our all-powerful will, was important, and it wasn't their will over ours. We developed the capacity to set appropriate boundaries, say no, set limits, speak our mind without guilt or fear. When we don't have this need met, we feel burdened and pressured, and we have difficulty setting limits. Lastly, when we get our need to feel unconditionally loved met as we're growing up in childhood, we develop the capacity to live with an open heart and integrate a loving relationship with vital sexuality. Without it, our self-esteem is based on looks and performance. We essentially objectify ourselves, and our heart isn't fully brought into sex. From this model, we can see that our clients' thoughts and behaviors in relationship to abuse is actually quite adaptive. The attachment system creates a map of how to engage in relationship, and the unconscious belief is that using this map will get them love and connection. Along with this, their nervous system is wired to find safety by keeping them engaged in this relationship. This is known as fawning, where a person is overcome by people-pleasing as a survival response, and they avoid conflict or disapproval at all costs. When a client is in a fawning response, they suppress their needs and desires in order to prioritize the needs and wants of others, often at the cost of their own well-being. And this behavior is a survival mechanism that was developed in response to trauma, particularly in environments where expressing one's needs or asserting oneself was not safe or encouraged. Another reason I decided to do this episode on healing patterns of narcissistic abuse is because the fawning response is so adaptive that it's often missed by mental health professionals as emotional dysregulation. The mask of perfectionism and okayness is so strong in clients who are fawning that the client themselves cannot even see that they're not okay. As I mentioned earlier, learning to be a secure base for myself really required that I learn to attune to myself and stay connected to myself as an ongoing practice. I had to relearn how to connect with my own needs and desires, which really helped me to find my autonomy, my sovereign boundary. And the more trust I built with myself, the more I attracted and was attracted to trustworthy people. Using this insight to support our clients in finding their way back into contact with their essence, with the truth of who they are, allows us to see the matrix of their life as a mirror for what's occurring within them. When we honor every single symptom that the client has as emerging from an adaptive strategy to get their needs met, even though we can see that the way that those strategies are actually interrupting their health now, we can support our client in completing and resolving the unfinished business that they're working out in their current relationship. A client who's enduring emotional abuse stays engaged in the cycle of abuse as an attempt to find safety because the fear of saying no or stopping the abuse lives within as a threat to their life. This is so important. When the nervous system is in fawning, there's this deep primal movement towards staying for fear that leaving would be the death of them. As we support our clients in giving themselves what it is that they long for from their partner, the deep repair of their attachment system occurs internally, and they start to meet themselves to the degree that they long to be met by the environment. So the attachment system longs to be met in the degree that it wants space or closeness. So, for example, a client who has an avoidant attachment system wants to be met in connection with that same degree of space, meaning they want to feel safe and okay having as much space as they want. Alternatively, someone with an anxious and secure attachment system wants to be wanted in the intensity that they want closeness with their partner. And if we can support our client in practicing wanting themselves that much, they essentially can find their way into repairing their attachment system. It's really important to note here that the absence of getting our needs met in childhood is experienced as neglect. So when something isn't done to us, we're just not given the thing that we've longed for, we experience neglect. And this can actually motivate a client to find the opposite of neglect. So being with a partner who is obsessive, controlling, jealous, and possessive is the opposite of neglect. And this offers the person who is an anxious, insecure type the closeness that their attachment system longs for. The confusion that can happen in the attachment system in this experience is that the person reads jealousy and possessiveness as love. Now, when a clinician sees a client working through the abusive cycle, enduring emotional abuse, and enduring patterns of narcissistic abuse in their romantic relationship, the therapist can often feel stuck in wanting the client to leave that relationship. However, as we know, that's not our work to do. It's not our work to save people from their own patterns or to carry their burden for them. There's actually a lot of dignity in respecting a client to carry their own burden. And what's more is that if we think that the client leaving is the solution, we're actually missing the opportunity to support our client in healing. What this means is that if we're looking at the relationship dynamic as the problem, then we're overlooking what need the client is trying to get met within this relationship dynamic. Seeing the relationship as a mirror of what's occurring within the client, we can really support our client in deepening into their healing. And I've heard many clients over the years gaslight themselves into thinking that they should stay with narratives of, I'm too old. If I would have left when I was 35, I could have met somebody else. I don't want to be alone. Or a client who's younger might convince themselves, I want to have kids soon. The clock is ticking away. Or they might convince themselves that everyone else is like this, and so my standards are too high. I also hear clients gaslight themselves by telling themselves that if they do the work, they wouldn't need their partner to change. The spiritual propaganda sort of gets put on them that says, I should be able to be enlightened enough to not get hooked. However, we are designed and wired for safe connection. We're designed and wired for attunement and reciprocity and trust and relationship. Enduring a stressful and traumatic relationship is not an expression of health. It's an expression of trauma. It's a trauma response. Helping our clients to unhook from that cycle of abuse and reconnect with themselves, they can become a safe refuge for themselves, the refuge that they've always longed for, which in turn allows them to make a choice from their sovereignty as opposed to from their wounding. I was consulting with a therapist recently who is working with a client where in their marriage, they're enduring a lot of emotional abuse and control from their wife. The client's wife is hypersensitive to senses. And so every time they buy something new or bring something new into the house, the client's wife smells the smells that she perceives as toxic and then wants to get rid of that thing and buy something new to replace it. And if the client doesn't agree or defer with his wife, she becomes very reactive and threatening and threatens to kick him out of the house. And she is the primary breadwinner. And this really scares the client. And so the therapist that I was working with was just confounded by this relationship dynamic. Why would this man stay in this relationship where he doesn't have a voice or doesn't seem to have a choice and needs to give his will over to his wife in order to find safety and avoid her reaction and walks on eggshells around her? And so, as we were consulting, I started asking about the client's upbringing. Who was in his house as he was growing up? What was his life like growing up? And come to find out, he was abused sexually and physically by people in his home as he was growing up. And so from a young age, he learned that to find safety in relationship, I need to give my will over to these people. And there's this dynamic too, financially, that can actually have somebody feel trapped. And when we feel trapped in a relationship, the attachment system is more likely to use those old strategies because it doesn't seem like there's a choice for something else. And so instead of focusing on the problems in the marriage, I encouraged this therapist to focus on healing the trauma that actually drives the behavior. Because when a client can tone their vagus nerve and repair their attachment system internally, they're no longer hyper-identified with their attachment wound. Meaning, when a client is being driven by the map from the past where the attachment wounding happened, they actually believe that they are their wounding. Their identity is intertwined in that wounding. And so, once we support our clients in healing that internal rupture by becoming a secure base for themselves, they differentiate from that wounding and reconnect with their true nature. I hope you'll join us over on Patreon, where I'm going to offer more cases on working with clients who are healing from emotional and narcissistic abuse, as well as healing developmental trauma. Thanks so much for listening. Join us in the Awaken Therapist online classroom, where my guest offers a masterclass in their area of expertise. This is intended for educational purposes only, and the content here should not be taken as advice or clinical supervision. Find out more at awakentherapist.com. The Awaken Therapist Level 1 certification is starting September 2025. In this 6-month training, you'll learn how to unlock the magic of psychotherapy. Join us in exploring deeper dimensions in your work with clients with less burnout. To learn more, check out our trainings at awakentherapist.com.